We're good?
All right. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Today is March 20th, 2017. Colleagues, today we're going to have open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5541 for our Treasurer of State. John, why don't you kick us off, and then we'll bring our State Treasurer up.
Mr. Chair, before he begins, I need to excuse myself and trot down to Hearing Room A, where I will be ensconced should you need me.
You are excused, Senator.
And Mr. Treasurer, no disrespect, but as a former legislator, you know that this is the time of the year where we're all in six places simultaneously.
Indeed.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thanks.
All right, John.
Good afternoon, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee. The Treasurer is before you today and today only. They have a very good presentation. But they will also need to do public testimony today. They're just in and out today. And if there are any major issues, they'll be back for a phase two presentation where we'll have a little more time for them if needed.
So perfect. Welcome up, Treasurer Reed.
Please.
The floor is all yours. If you could just introduce yourself for the record and then run with it from there.
Great. Good afternoon, Chair Smith, Chair Manning, committee members. I'm Tobias Reed. I am honored to serve as Oregon State Treasurer and happy to be before you for the first time in that capacity. Also happy to have our Deputy Treasurer, Darren Bond, with you with us. And we are excited to give you an overview of the State Treasury. Having been on that side of the dais before, I can appreciate the work you're doing and hope this will be useful as you begin. The State Treasury is a big agency that does a lot of important things, but they generally fit into these pillars, and we'll have more to say about each of them as we go forward. Our mission really is about financial empowerment, and to give some evidence to the size of our effort, these numbers, I think, are useful. Our state portfolio is about $92 billion. That does a lot of things, but our important work to manage that well makes many of those things possible. We have more than $230 billion every year that go through the state treasury in terms of transactions, $13 billion of bonds that finance all sorts of different infrastructure around the state, $2.7 billion in 529 savings. Those are for college and other post-secondary efforts. And we're protecting $2 billion in deposits at depositories. Our work really is about these three themes: doing business the right way, making it easier for Oregonians to invest in themselves, and trying to think for the long run every time we're making decisions. And most of our work is behind the scenes, protecting those finances, improving the state's long-term fiscal sustainability. Amongst these priorities, we'll talk about some more of them as we go forward. Everyone wants to know how we did, so it's a number that we point to frequently. 6.9% returns on the portfolio in calendar year 2016 puts us in the very top of our peers. We launched a new intermediate term pool for local governments and continue to invest in expanded capacity amongst our staff to have a better ability to manage the risks that we confront as large investors. We've refinanced significant amounts of debt for a savings of $384 million since 2010 and been an active investor as we cast our proxy votes. Consolidated our investment division into new offices in Tigard, led financing for a number of school districts and their matching grants that the legislature approved in the last session, launched the ABLE savings program. I'll have more to say about that in a minute. Continued to expand the reach of the 529 College Savings Plan and are about to launch Oregon Saves, which is the new name for the retirement savings plan that those of you who were here in 2015 participated in creating. Our priorities for 2017-19 really revolve around a continued effort to expand our capacity and our resilience in terms of our ability to manage our own affairs, to improve our capacity around ESG, environment, social, and governance considerations, and the risks that they create and force us to confront in investment. replacing and modernizing the functional but aging infrastructure that's associated with a lot of our cash management and banking functions, protecting our state's credit rating. Happy to tell you, as you probably already know, that we enjoy very strong credit ratings that were recently reaffirmed by the credit rating agencies at the beginning of this year. And as I mentioned, expansion of the ABLE program and Oregon Saves as well. This is more of a graphic representation of how our work is organized, and it gives me a chance to talk a little more specifically about the gentleman to my right. Darren Bond, if not the most tenured member of Treasury, is very near the top. He also has 13 direct reports. All of us are getting older every day, and much as we're not happy about it, Darren's retirement is getting closer. So one of the things that we're also going to be asking for is authority to hire a COO to help reduce that that load of direct reports on Darren and to help us prepare for his eventual retirement. That resilience will be really important for us.
So, Mr. Treasurer, really quick, where yes, in the flow chart will the COO be located?
The COO will report to the Deputy Treasurer.
Okay.
And will rationalize and reallocate some of his other direct reports.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you. And as most of you know, our budget is set up that our programs are self-supporting. So you can see on the left, the lighter blue is all the other funds. The general fund is two specific loans that we're seeking in this upcoming biennium to help expand the reach of Oregon Saves and Oregon ABLE. But the vast majority is other funds. And again, emphasis on loans with respect to the general fund slice of that pie. On the right is where those dollars go. And that gives, a useful overview of how our budget works. Like many others, we've got a number of key performance measures. Most of these are self-explanatory, and you can certainly read them as fast as I can. I think it's worth highlighting the first one in particular, that return rate that again puts us in the very top of our peers. In fact, on a 10-year basis, we're in the 95th percentile. So we are doing very well, and that's a credit to the professional investment staff as part of our investment management division. continued discussion of the key performance measures, and here I want to highlight the red one, number 9. We'll talk more about the college savings plan as we go forward, but our target here is to make sure that the geographic reach is significant, and we're not yet where we want to be. But there's reason for optimism. We take that very seriously. We've begun a number of initiatives to make sure that reach is improving and that more people are aware of the College Savings Plan. Our Be College Ready program, which has an attractive incentive for people who start a plan, was initially in 4 school districts as a pilot. It's now in 15, and we're ready to take that statewide. And as a matter of comparison, statewide, we have 9% of Oregonians age 25 and younger who have a 529 college savings account. So even though we're not where we want to be on those county by county, we are better than that number on a statewide basis. So we continue to make that a real priority. And of course, we're working hard to deliver savings in a variety of ways and places. I mentioned before the refunding, refinancing that we've been doing around debt. Since 2010, that's created $384 million of savings to borrowers. We've reduced the merchant card processing fee significantly. I know that's important to a number of you. We made some real changes in how we manage some of the funds we're charged with managing by bringing them in-house. We've had two components to the savings. We've delivered at the top. We've reduced the fees that are associated with that management, $5.2 million on an annual basis. And at the bottom, the choices that we've made in-house have delivered $24 million additional earnings over what we would have enjoyed with our external partners. If you add those two numbers up, That total benefit is different, is another number, but the same two components come together to deliver in excess of $137 million savings for the local governments who participate in the Oregon Short-Term Fund. And as the College Savings Plan continues to grow, we're able to reduce the fees that participants pay there, most recently by 50%. We've got drivers and risks, like everyone else. Happy to say that the interest in the Retirement Savings Plan, Oregon Saves, and Oregon Able has generated some more demands for us. We have evolving needs around data and information security and the tools that will allow us to do a good job with our investments. Risks, like everyone else, a changing environment, aging infrastructure, and what we believe is low staffing levels. We'll say more about that as well. And, of course, market stability that we all confront. The history of the agency is something many of you know. We've been involved in a variety of innovative approaches and continued to try to add to our capacity as we've stood up a number of new programs, ABLE and Oregon Saves, we've already talked about significantly. So I'd like to move now to a quick rundown of some of our major divisions so you have a sense of what's happening in each of them. The Investment Management Division is perhaps the best known of the activities we engage in. It's by no means and more important than the others. They all fit together well, but this is one that people usually associate with the state treasury. And it's with a $92 billion portfolio, it's significant. We are a large investor. We're a sophisticated investor. We're global and diversified, taking advantage of all the opportunities we can to manage risk and deliver those returns. This is overseen by the Oregon Investment Council, as you know. And continues to be part of a long-run effort to improve our capacity, our technical expertise, and what we're able to do. You can see how that portfolio is made up, the various pieces of it. And again, these requests, these positions, are funded by the assets in the portfolio. They're not general fund. They're not competing with the other priorities that you're working hard to fund. I mentioned we're proud of the fact that we rank very highly relative to our peers in the decisions that we make and the results that we deliver. But we are relatively expensive in that effort because we are reliant on external expertise. So we have some opportunities to increase our net returns by decreasing the costs that are associated with our work, and that's at the center of our request. You can see that in a real graphic way here on the chart on the right. These are the 13 large portfolios that most closely match our profile and divided into quartiles, and we are at the bottom, both in our investment office, investment officers, and our operations and governance and support functions. So it stands to reason that we're near the bottom on the total. We're able to add the positions that we're seeking, we'll still be near the bottom, but our capacity will be significantly improved. At the same time, you can see on the left where our portfolio, how our portfolio is comprised, the various asset classes that make up that $92 billion. One of the things that I have talked and thought a lot about is the opportunity that is presented to us as a significant and large investor. And I think there are real opportunities for us to be even more forward-looking and active in thinking about the risks that are presented to us through those ESG considerations, through governance questions. And we're seeking to make an ESG risk function part of the Investment Management Division. So there are plenty of opportunities where our activism in a very positive way can lead to better returns for us and for other investors by making sure that markets are functioning well, that we're advocating for transparency, that investors have an opportunity to weigh in on policies that impact performance. These are all things that we want to be more active and more proactive about, and that's the reason for our efforts in that regard. Move to debt management. Many of you know Laura Lockwood McCall. She coordinates the division that's at the center of the issuance of Oregon's debt. She interacts with our rating agencies, works to refund that debt and save us all significant dollars, as well as staffing the Debt Policy Advisory Commission, which provides good guidance to all of you in the legislature about how to prudently use our debt capacity, and interacts with local governments and as they seek to use their capacity prudently as well. I've always found this slide useful as a measure or representation of our indebtedness. A couple of things to note here. One is the relative trend of those amounts, and the other is the components that make it up. You'll see the declining influence of the COPs, the green. That is in large part due to the fact that voters approved several years ago Article 11 Q bonds, very flexible general obligation bonds that have replaced those appropriation credits. They're less expensive, so we've been trying to refinance into those. There are some elements that can't with which you can't do that, so that green slice, though thinner, will likely remain until they are retired, but much less of a component of our total indebtedness. And I think many of you know about the Oregon Facilities Authority, but I always like to highlight the good work that the Facilities Authority does. These pictures are for you, Chair Manning. The Facilities Authority does great work helping nonprofits around the state take advantage of the good reputation of Oregon and more opportunities to reduce costs and take advantage of more sophisticated financing tools than they might otherwise be able to. The nonprofits pay the bonds, they're conduit bonds, but by gathering together and using the expertise of the Facilities Authority and the Debt Management Division, they can make their dollars go farther and serve the state and various communities in lots of good ways.
Really quick on that, Mr. Charger, are those bonds traditionally collateralized with some form of asset? How are those backed up?
Mr. Chair, I think it varies, but typically they are collateralized either with something physical or typically revenue bonds, so they're backed up by some stream of revenue. I don't believe they're general obligation in that sense.
Got it. Thank you.
You bet. And we'll move to the finance division that really serves as the state's bank in a lot of ways, providing banking services for state agencies, including some public universities, lots of different specific and technical uses, $230 billion of transactions that run through the state treasury, and more than 14 million individual transactions. Nearly 1,000 local governments participate. That picture's for you, Chair Smith.
I like that.
I figured you would. Or life is sweet, right? The short-term fund is a really significant advantage for these local governments because it is significantly less expensive than anything you might find in the private sector and delivers better returns. We've even increased that rate as of today to 1.3%. So those are significant. We've also launched an intermediate fund for Clackamas Community College and Klamath Falls, who are participating in that as well. That return is a function of timing. We expect that it will be positive in the long run. And as I mentioned before, the Cash Management Improvement and Renewal Project is an ongoing effort to make sure that we're keeping that infrastructure current and functional and state of the art. We have three projects that are underway in this bucket. One that you may have heard about is the voice response system that's associated with that local government investment pool. And to underscore the importance of it, it failed last month, so our staff was taking manual transaction information for a time, significantly less efficient and effective, but underscores how important it's going to be when we have the online solution in place before too long. We're also ensuring and protecting those deposits that that local governments are placing with deposits when they exceed the federal insurance limits. And as a result of recent developments, we've been able to reduce that collateralization rate, which will free up even more capital for banks to lend. And IT is a pretty big issue as well. I want to touch on that briefly. We have a lot of sensitive information at Treasury, and we take that very seriously. We have a dedicated team that's led by our Chief Information Security Officer, our CISO, to ensure that all of our activities and standards are meeting the industry standards. We have to maintain that data separately from the rest of public data because of its sensitive nature. And we've been working closely with the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology and Chair Riley. We're seeking to add two positions here to continue to increase what we're able to do on an ongoing basis. I mentioned the 529 College Savings Plan as well. This has a really nice trajectory that we've been on, a good history, a pretty mature network now with 174,000 accounts, $2.7 billion of savings there. The history is interesting in that it parallels what we expect to happen with Oregon ABLE and with the Oregon Saves. It began with a general fund loan and then was paid back. So I have more to say about that in a moment. These are significant, and I think it's worth remembering we're at the stage now where there are significant distributions happening from these accounts as well. In 2016, almost $160 million was withdrawn from 529 accounts and sent to different institutions. Many of them, I would guess, a large portion of that in Oregon. It's not limited to Oregon institutions, but based on who is saving and where they're going to school, a large portion of that has gone to Oregon institutions, so those dollars are circulating in the Oregon economy as well. And Oregon ABLE, which I've mentioned before, really brings a lot of these same benefits of the College Savings Plan to people and families who are saving for expenses associated with disabilities, is quite new, having launched in December of last year. Happy to say that even in these 3 months, we've passed the $1 million in those accounts already. The importance of this is to allow people to save and accumulate assets without risking their eligibility for Social Security and other benefits. And we're excited about the trajectory that this network is on as well. And those of you who were here in 2015, remember the effort we went through to establish the Oregon Retirement Savings Plan. It's now known as Oregon Saves. This is motivated by the fact that almost half of people who are working in Oregon don't have access to a retirement savings plan at work. When people do have that access, they're much more likely to save. And that's what we're establishing here, an opt-out IRA. Representative Marsh is on the board with me that is implementing this. We've gone through a good process that's detailed the features. We've established relationships with a number of different service providers, and we're on track to roll out in a pilot phase in July with a selection of employers to make sure that we get the information sharing and the technology all right. We feel very good about where we're headed with that. And the fact that we're all going to benefit when people have access to retirement savings vehicles, because as they accumulate assets, that's reduced pressure on our social savings, our social safety net budgets in the future. Our general fund reduction options are fairly narrow in the sense that our only exposure to the general fund is in those loans that I mentioned for Oregon ABLE and Oregon Saves. So it is really just the question of how much that might be reduced in these various scenarios. To anticipate a question you might ask, we are focusing these options on Oregon Saves because Oregon ABLE is already running, and we have some responsibility to those folks who are already saving. So like everyone else, we hope to avoid these. We would like to get Oregon Saves up to speed quickly along the same trajectory as Oregon ABLE and the College Savings Plan in the past. And we're also contemplating and developing some new ways of communicating with the public, those who have a direct stake in what we do as beneficiaries, those who are customers, Oregonians in general, as we seek to improve our levels of financial literacy and for public in terms of the decisions we make and investment strategies, all those sorts of things. So we're working hard on some new methods of communication. And that takes me through the end. So I appreciate your attention and happy to try to respond to any questions you might have.
That's a pretty succinct presentation. Thank you.
I've been on that side of the dice.
Thank you. Bless you. Any questions from the committee? Yeah, Representative.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And thanks for your presentation and congratulations on your new job. And
thank
the
you.
Question I ask has to do with stuff that I think happened under your predecessor. But when I'm a member of the Checkbook Caucus, and we uncovered tens of thousands of dollars each year in foreign travel. Do you know, and I don't have any details on that, but can you find out what that was about?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nierman, I'd be happy to look into that further. With that explanation, I think I would need to look into it further to give you a good answer.
Good, thank you.
Any questions or comments? Representative.
Mr. Treasurer, welcome. So nice to see you here.
Thank you, Representative.
As you know, I've been asking all agencies about delinquent or uncollected debt, not the debt that Oregon owes other people, but the debt that Oregonians owe us. And your agency has been remarkable in that year after year it's showing $0, so well done on that. This last year, I noticed that you had about $250,000 in new debt, and almost all of it was collected, which, again, I would say congratulations, but can you give us any hint what might have been going on there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gomberg, as a rookie, I might need to look to the Deputy Treasurer here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gomberg, honestly, I can't. We have very little where any taxpayer would owe the Treasury. Keeping in mind we're the bank, so generally an agency, you know, your taxpayer owes, you know, they owe revenue, or a forest lands holder may owe some money to forestry, for instance. When they collect the money, they give it to us, and so we're simply the bank for that. As far as specifically any debt that increased on our balance sheet, I would guess that would be some kind of receivables-related debt from other state agencies, likely.
Darren, really quick, can you give your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Darren Bond, Deputy State Treasurer.
Thank you.
I've done this too many times to forget that. I apologize.
Well, thank you. If a lot of money were owed and not being collected, Mr. Chairman, I'd probe a little deeper, but they seem to be doing a pretty good job here, so I'm going to let them off the hook. Except to say that I did note that year after year, no debt, and this year there was about $250,000 that showed up in the LFO delinquent debt reports, but virtually all of it collected during the course of the year.
Representative Gomberg, I'll figure out exactly what that was and get back to you on that.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Really quick, State Treasurer, can you go to page 15 on your slide?
Yeah.
There's a picture there, and it looks like it's the commission.
That's the Oregon Investment Council.
Okay, the council. Yes. Can you just take a few minutes and walk through with this committee how the council operates, their function, the role they play with you, et cetera?
Sure. So I'm a member of the Oregon Investment Council, the other ex officio member, and as you know, ex officio just means by virtue of another office. I'm a voting member. The other ex officio is on the right of the picture. That's Steve Rodman, who's the executive director of PERS. The other four members are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. Our chair is Rekaya Adams, who's also the chief investment officer of the Meyer Memorial Trust. We also have Rex Kim, John Russell, and Rick Miller. I always funny to look at that picture because Rick Miller makes me feel really small. He's significantly taller than I am. The Investment Council is the board to which the investment management team brings proposals. So we make the decisions around asset allocation. I forget which slide it was, but you can see, I'll try to find it quickly.
16.
Yes, you can see on slide 16 here, you can see where our portfolio sits. 20% in fixed income, 37.5% in public equities. These are decisions that the investment council makes relative to what's happening in the world. Do we like that strategy? Should it be more? Should it be less? You can see also the difference between those two numbers. 38.7% public equity right now. The target is 37.5%. We don't want to make the decision to go to 37.5% without a good opportunity or a good strategy behind that. So those are the kinds of questions that the investment council takes on. At our meeting last week, we heard a proposal from Apollo, which is a private equity firm, and decided that we're going to allocate $500 million to their new fund. So one of the challenges of being a large portfolio like this is that the due diligence associated with any deal doesn't depend on the amount of dollars associated with it. So we have a lot of money to put to work, and this fund pays out significantly during the year, about $3.5 billion regularly to retirees. So we've got a lot of things to balance. We have very talented staff, and our job, I think, is to make sure that we're paying attention to that process, asking good questions of the investment management staff, and adhering to a long run strategy that does not chase the whims of the ups and downs of the market. So you will not necessarily 6.9% for 2016 is a very good number relative to our peers. But I don't want this committee or the public to think that we're going to match what the market does. That's not our aim. Our aim is to build a portfolio that is steady and stable for the long run over 20 years. Perfect. Hope
thank
that helps.
Oh, it's sure. Perfect. Perfect. Thank you. Mr. Co-Chair.
Co-Chair, thank you. Well, let me give you a real hard one here. How much is actually invested in-house?
It's about 20% in terms of what we manage ourselves, as opposed to working with fund managers, and that's in different asset classes. But we're eager to do that where it makes sense, where we can pay Oregon wages and do the production type work in Oregon, as opposed to paying New York wages and Wall Street. But there are certainly a lot of places where we need that specific expertise and external advice and opinion. So it's a mix, but we're definitely interested in having the capacity to make those decisions intelligently.
Okay, so 20%. Let me see if I can make it hard for you, because that was too easy for you to explain. And 20% in terms of dollars and cents, roughly what would that look like?
Well, in terms of the total, that's of 90 billion, that's about 18 billion.
Okay, I'm done. He's already prepared for all these. So.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Mr. Cocher. Any questions? Any additional questions from the committee? Well, Mr. Treasurer, you're so good at our public testimony witness registration list is blank. And so
short presentation, no testimony. You might have to give him the money, Mr. Chair.
That's right.
We'll Mr. Chair, if we can bank this time for a future
right,
meeting if we
right,
need it.
Right, so, right.
We'll try to invest it in the meantime.
Mr. Treasurer, we definitely appreciate all that you're doing. We appreciate
Thank
the
you.
Great relationship you've developed with the legislature, both obviously with the Democratic Party and with the Republican Party.
Thanks.
It says a lot about you.
Thank
so
you.
We appreciate all you're doing. I see a few folks in the background. Last chance. You want to come up?
I can't speak freely. I can only speak as a citizen.
We'd love to have you come speak as a citizen. Would you like to?
Can I put it in the bag?
Yes. You come speak with us another day, if that's all right.
Thank you.
All right. John, anything else?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Sir, are we good?
Yes, sir.
Committee members, anything else? We're good?
Good.
We are adjourned early today. All right. Let's have a great afternoon.
That's impressive.
Let's have a great afternoon.